Are you a founder, co-founder, aspiring entrepreneur, or just someone who loves to hear about how companies are built? Then join us as we talk with founders and CEOs who have been there and done that. Welcome to the Founders Formula Podcast, sponsored by Hatchet Ventures. And now, your host, Chet Lovgren.
Welcome one, welcome all to the Founders Formula Podcast, the show that's designed to bring you the latest and greatest stories and insights from founders worldwide who have been there and done that. My guest today is a former tenured sales professional turned founder and CEO, while also acting as an advisor to several growth stage companies. His company, Sendoso, helps B2B businesses stand out by giving them new ways to engage with customers throughout the buyer's journey. Please welcome co-founder and CEO of Sendoso, Chris Rudigrop. Chris, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Chet. Excited to be here.
Likewise. And for those that don't know, I jacked up the first intro, so he's really nice. He let me go a second time. Hey, Chris, we're really excited to have you. And I know, everyone wants to hear about Sendoso, how it came to be. But first, really what I want to dig into is tell us a little bit about your background up to the point of founding Sendoso and some of your experience prior to that venture. Tell us a story.
Yeah. So born and raised in Northern California, went to college at a place called Chico State University. Kind of found my way into entrepreneurship and startups in college. Actually, I was pretty intrigued about kind of how startups come about, took some classes on it, ended up actually starting a company in college that I was able to sell to a company in San Francisco right after college. Very small, though, like a handful of people, but it kind of gave me the itch. But then I really knew that I didn't know enough and I wanted to learn more. And so I found myself in various sales roles for the course of the next kind of 8 or 9 years at a couple of different companies, mostly in kind of account executive roles or early first salesperson at a startup roles, and really kind of learned a lot of how companies really grow and start through those experiences.
That's awesome. And I know for some people that are probably living on Mars and aren't aware of what Sendoso is. Could you tell us a little bit about Sendoso, what it is, how it works, who your ICP is? And then we definitely love to dig into really the story about how you came to be a founder of Sendoso and how you kind of created this amazing product and company that you have.
Yeah, so Sendoso, we're a sending platform that helps other companies send out direct mail, corporate gifts, handwritten notes, swag, you name it, we can help send it with a mix of SaaS software, a marketplace of all the different things that you could send, and then the fulfillment and logistics behind the scenes. I started the company thinking that this was going to be used purely by sales. We've since seen that, marketers love it, sales, SDR leaders, customer success, customer support, client service, HR, the list goes on across a myriad of different industries from high tech to finance to hospitality, sports teams, et cetera. So it's a pretty wide use case of different ICPs that can benefit from sending stuff to, prospects, customers, or employees.
That's awesome. And how did you come about creating this concept of Sendoso? Like, how did you think like, okay, hey, direct mail, that's a thing again. You know what I mean? Or like, how did you break into that? Because right? Like even now I feel like direct mail is making an even bigger comeback, but like at a gifting level, like where did this concept come in? Where does it play into the sales process primarily when you were getting acclimated with it?
Yeah. So, like I mentioned, I spent about a decade in software sales prior to starting the company. So I was in the trenches as an AE, booking meetings, closing prospects, et cetera. And I saw the evolution of email through those years. And a decade ago, you could send, 10 emails and get 9 responses. And it was, email was like the obvious way to prospect and reach out to people. But, there's just been diminishing returns with the, trillions of emails that are sent every year. And so I saw that firsthand about 6 years ago while I was working at my last company, Talkdesk. And I said, hey, it's so easy to send a gazillion emails. What else can I do? And I found myself writing handwritten notes. I'd found myself grabbing swag from the swag closet and boxing it up. Or I'd go, see that a prospect, tweeted about playing golf and I'd send them some golf balls. But all these things were, you know, packing boxes, writing notes, you know, running a little mini post office at the office, worked really well. But I was like, hey, why isn't there software to make this way easier? And so I did some Google searches, and there really wasn't anything out there to meet my needs. And so I said, shoot, this is going to be a huge opportunity today, but even bigger in the future. And let me see what I can do. And so I said, I kind of dove in, you know, decided, hey, I can do this myself. I can, you know, I know what kind of software is that I need to build because, you know, I am the end user. And so I decided, hey, let me just draw up what I want on paper, convert that into some screen kind of mock-ups, found an external agency to help build it out. But it all actually started with a concept called CoffeeSender.com or a Salesforce app called CoffeeSender. So Sendoso was kind of version kind of 2.0, I would say. And kind of the first iteration was, hey, can I build a Salesforce app and a simple gift card sending company to see if people will actually like pay to send stuff before I go into the whole logistics functionality side of things.
Yeah. And as someone who uses Sendoso, I know that your logistics operation is pretty intense. I'm sure like it's almost like y'all are in the logistics business these days. I mean, that's, you got warehouses all over the country, right? Like,
yeah, it's definitely a big behind the scenes. You know, we try to make it as simple as possible for someone who just click and send, but behind the scenes, there's software and a lot of moving parts from warehouses and supply chains to get something from point A to point B.
Yeah. And I want to dig into V1 of Sendoso. Yeah. As you say, Sendoso is kind of V2. So CoffeeSender.
Yes.
Like, so you basically created this whole thing and were using like the thing that you had built before you started trying to offer that to customers. Like you built this whole thing just to solve your problem as an AE. So and that's when you were like, let's go and do it like for other companies.
Exactly. So one of the things I was doing aside from sending swag and packing boxes is I'd grab Starbucks cards and I'd send them out to prospects. And that was working great. And so I was like, well, what's like the simplest version that I could create day one? And that's really where I landed on CoffeeSender, which is, hey, can I make it easy to send Starbucks gift cards out to people? And that was something that I said, hey, I can bite this off. I can put some money into it and I could build this for myself first, test it out, use it. And then actually, that's how I met my co-founder, Braden, in that he saw CoffeeSender, liked it, was another salesperson using it. And was like, I could sell the heck out of this. Like, let me join forces. And his company was actually going through an acquisition. So it was like perfect timing for him to come in. And he saw the greater vision of Sendoso right away too. And we kind of pivoted off of CoffeeSender into Sendoso after kind of about 9 months of CoffeeSender's being in existence.
That's awesome. And how did that work? Were you still, because I know a lot of people, they do as much in similar situations, do as much building as they can before they go see a 9-to-5, right? And pursue this thing. How did that work? Was Braden the first one to jump fully into it? Were you the first one to jump fully into it? Were both of you kind of doing behind the scenes? And then nine months later, you jump fully into it. What did that look like for you two?
So I was doing some of the behind the scenes, kind of product engineering operations, like more of the stuff that doesn't need the 9-to-5 customer facing interactions. And then Braden actually jumped ship about 6 months before I did to jump into CoffeeSender full time and basically just run demos and support and customer success all day, every day. And so at that point, he was having so much demand that I said, hey, I need to jump into this full time too. So I jumped in and then we spent about 3 months kind of winding down CoffeeSender while building out Sendoso and then another 3 months building out Sendoso and then launching it. So it was kind of a perfect transition period because we had a bit of confidence and proof point that we had something. So it wasn't just cold turkey starting day zero.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really cool. Yeah. And fortunate too, right? That you didn't have those customer facing roles where you could kind of,
totally. You know. It was very fortunate to have them. And then, you know, I think that there is a decent amount of stuff you can do in your nights and weekends. You know, and so it's, you know, instead of going to a bar, getting drinks with a buddy, I was staring at my computer screen, trying to fix bugs or, you know, draw out user flows and stuff.
Yeah, it still is equally exciting in my
mind. Yeah, it's fun.
Now, before starting Sendoso, I noticed you had a lot of senior and enterprise sales experience. Yep. How do you think that experience helped guide you on this journey of being a co-founder and CEO so far? Like, what are some things that you've drawn from that experience as you started Sendoso that you think were applicable?
Yeah, so I'd say probably the three biggest takeaways for me there. One is, you know, day one, going after customers right away. I think Braden and myself, both being sales backgrounds, we're not scared to cold call, to reach out, to start building pipeline like day zero. I think oftentimes there's certain kind of product and engineering founders that want to perfect the best features and make it the prettiest and like don't want to talk to customers for, you know, years and years. And so we did the opposite, which is like we talked to customers like day zero. We actually had contracts signed with a slide deck and screenshots before the product was even launched. So it was a good testament to like building like product market fit while you're building the product. I think that's the first thing, is just like going and selling this. The second thing, as it relates to really venture funding, so we've raised about $155 million in funding over the course of a seed, an A, a B, and a C round. And so each of those is like a sales cycle in itself. You're going out, you're pitching, you're running through a demo, you're getting a bunch of no's, you're getting one yes, you move them through the pipeline. So I just thought fundraising was just like another sale. I'm just like closing, you know, $1 million or $100 million deals. And so that's how I position it in my head. So, you know, again, I think some founders might feel like, ah, this VC said no to you. Like, and they might take that personally. And I was like, I don't care. In sales, you get lots of no's and you move through it. So I think that's important. And then the last is really recruiting, which especially in the very early years when you're 5, 10, 50 people, you know, recruiting is crucial. And again, you're kind of selling people the dream that they should quit their maybe higher paying job to go up with something that's a bit more risky, hopefully more upside. And so there's a bit of sales involved in terms of just like recruiting in the early days too.
Yeah, the sale is never done. Even if, like, you know, I think there's this vision for a lot of people that they're like, once I become the CEO or once I found my own company, I'm done. Like, you know, Sam Jacobs at Pavilion always told me, he's like, you don't think I have bosses to answer to? I got a whole board. I got investors. Like, it never stops, man.
You're always selling. I mean, even today, I'm constantly talking to customers. I'm talking to new prospects, etc. So I think it also helps our go-to-market team seeing a CEO that's very out there on, you know, I just did a road show. I met with part virtually, part in person, about 120 customers. And so I think that also goes back to my love of just one-on-one FaceTime with people and, you know, for my sales days.
Yeah, that's so cool, man. And I'm curious, like, you know, so you have this co-founder, the two of you are working on this together. Tell us a bit more about that relationship, especially what interests me is because you were both from the like AE, the sales world.
Yeah.
What skills do you feel that both of you have that complement each other? And like, how do you find that working relationship? And I mean, especially it's interesting to me because you're both salespeople, right? Yeah. So like in that, like salespeople pretty much have some inherently similar core skills. What do you feel is different between the two of you and how does that work out?
Yeah. So if I were to look back, if I were to look on paper at this, it'd be like, wow, they are doomed to fail. Like two AEs starting this company, same skill set. I think the thing that made it work for us is, you know, I stepped out and started focusing on product and what needed to be built because we were building for salespeople. So it's kind of like I knew what we needed to build and I took the leap to learn a little bit more about product and engineering while Braden stayed focused on sales. And so I think that helped divide and conquer in the very early days. But, you know, pretty quickly about, I think maybe our fifth or eighth employee, we brought on a really seasoned COO. And she was instrumental, she's still with us today, in terms of a lot of the other areas like legal and finance and HR and operations and some of these other areas that didn't have a lot of expertise in either. And so I think we quickly hired around ourselves and found people that were experts in, you know, engineering and product and operations. And I think as a CEO, your job is to delegate and just hire people that are smarter than you.
Yeah. And I'm curious, you just hit on something interesting. So you kind of covered those bases on the operations side, the finance, the legal, that stuff very early on. Mm-hmm. But what's really interesting to me, and I know that the Sendoso that I'm using today is not the Sendoso that you built originally. So obviously you've had a lot of engineers and product and people working and coding, but like in the earlier days, even with the base product that you initial mm-hmm. concept, even if we're going back to Coffee Sender, not being an incredibly technical person, it sounds like you taught yourself a lot of those skills on the product side to make it work the way you had to make it work for the time being. Is that correct?
Yeah. So by no means am I like doing code reviews and like load balancing servers, but I could like understand enough where I could be in a conversation with somebody who could actually do it. So I think that was helpful. Just the confidence of like what's possible and then making sure people are actually doing that. And then I built a good advisor program where I had other, you know, engineering leader advisors in the early days that would kind of spot check or do other things that I wasn't doing. And I had some strong trust in an early engineering leader that we found through this outsource agency that worked because we didn't have a technical co-founder. I didn't want to not build this idea because I didn't have an engineering background. So, you know, went out and hired an agency to help with it. And then that agency ended up, you know, years later, we ended up bringing them on as like full-time engineering employees. So that was helpful there. But I think it was a mix of, you know, knowing what needed to be done and having enough level of confidence that I could have conversations around the technical side and then surrounding myself with some advisors who could actually, you know, get into the weeds a bit more than I could.
Yeah. And that's really interesting. I'm seeing, you know, it no longer is it the days of the, I always say it's like the Mark Zuckerbergs and stuff where mm-hmm. it's the very technical person who then doesn't have the people, social or sales skills to be able to take it to the next level and they have to bring in someone else. We're seeing the reverse of that. We're seeing a ton of salespeople and go-to-market leaders and advisors who are like, I'm going to solve for this problem that I have, right? I'm going to scratch my own itch. And then they're like, I'll go find the people to do the product and the engineering and make that work. And it sounds like you went through a lot of self-education as well. So you could understand what to look for in those conversations and make sure you balanced all your known unknowns, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that's why we're seeing more of a surge of the sales tech, MarTech space too, is because exactly the phenomenon you just explained.
Yeah. You were talking about the skill of sales in your presentations and in your acquisition of rounds of funding, right? And you've had multiple rounds of funding. I'm curious to hear which one did you find the most challenging? Was it that first round? Was it the most recent round? Was it one in between? Out of all the rounds of funding you've raised, which one did you find most challenging and why?
Yeah, so one of the middle rounds. So our seed round, which was 2 million, you know, we were able to kind of semi-bootstrap a bit in the early days. And so we were able to get some traction enough. So like what we had $500,000 in ARR when we went to raise a seed round, which, you know, a lot of companies today like are raising money off of ideas or pitch decks and having no traction. So we had a good amount of traction going into that. It was also a warm introduction from my previous CEO who was, you know, wildly successful. And so it was like a successful CEO introducing another founder to the VC firm that backed him. So that was helpful in terms of like a warm intro plus traction made the seed round easy enough. I think the A and the B rounds were the harder ones because that's where, you know, 10 million and 40 million were invested. And, you know, there was or 12 million and 40 million, but there was more proof of traction, more proof that this was a category. I think in the early years, people are like, oh, cool, gifting, but, you know, will people use it? Or like, is that like a de facto category? You know, I think by the C round, we proved that for sure. And that round of 100 million from SoftBank was more obvious than ever in that, hey, we've got tens of millions in revenue, hundreds of millions of gifts being spent, you know, millions of gifts being delivered. And so it was like the proof is obvious, but we had to like convince investors in probably the A round, which was maybe the most hardest, that this was a true category, that we had the team to build it, that, you know, we were ready to kind of go into growth mode. So
that's really cool. And I know that a lot of the listeners, like we have people that are current founders looking for new insights and best practices. Mm-hmm. We have first time founders and also obviously a lot of aspiring entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
For more the latter two, the first time founders and aspiring entrepreneurs in those rooms when they're pitching their idea, or maybe they already have a product with some traction.
Yeah.
What are some tips that you would give them as they're going through that whole process of trying to secure a round of funding in that very early growth stage? Like what kind of things can you say, like recommend this, don't recommend that? What's some advice you would give?
Yeah. So I'd say one is, you know, don't be scared to get out there and start talking to VCs. Like a VC is not going to steal your idea. So pitch as much as you can. make a pitch list, like thinking about his prospect, like here's the 20 VCs I want to talk to. Maybe there's five VCs that you don't really want to take money from, but you could go pitch them first so that you can get the kinks out. So I'd say kind of put together your ideal prospect list. I'd say share your slide deck with other CEOs. Like I oftentimes get reached out to and say like, hey, you know, raising a seed round, would love your eyes on this deck. Do you think blah, blah, blah? And I'm like, sure, like interesting. I'm happy to, you know, pay it forward and look at it. So I'd say get others to look at your deck. There might be a blind spot. I think there's a lot of people willing to help out there. So I'd say kind of the third advice is like find some advisors that could be CEOs, could be other experts that have maybe been there, done that, and you know, ask them for advice. And I think that a lot of people out there, and myself in the early days and still today, I have a big network of advisors that I ask for a myriad of different things. So I think, you know, don't be scared to like ask people for help.
Yeah. Community is everything. And I think recurring theme on the podcast is that just because you're the CEO or the founder or co-founder doesn't mean you have to have all the answers. In fact, it's probably good if you don't have some answers because you don't want to be necessarily a jack of every trade, right? Yep. You gotta be able to delegate something at some point, have that trust in that process. Chris, we're coming up on time here, but I would love for you to kind of tell the listeners any parting words of wisdom, especially with, you know, all the, what I've been saying, unknown unknowns that we're headed for, even though we know what they are, we're just waiting to get through them.
Yeah.
What kind of words of wisdom would you give to any founders or CEOs out there right now? And what are some parting words of wisdom you'd have for them?
Sure. So I'd say for folks that haven't started, that have an idea or that are working full time and, you know, deciding on what to do, I say, go do it. You know, go find some engineers off of Upwork, go find an agency, go figure it out. And what's the worst that could happen if you fail or you lose some money a little bit, you know, you could go back to your other job. So I'd say for the people that are not entrepreneurs yet, or that are in the weeds, you know, too scared to try stuff, go try stuff on the weekends, you know, figure it out. For, you know, other entrepreneurs, successful entrepreneurs, people that are later stage, you know, one of my secret powers is building a community of advisors. And I'd say, get out there and do that for yourself, and that will pay off dividends. And that's kind of my advice for folks that maybe only have, you know, a handful of advisors, where I have, you know, 100-ish plus advisors. And that it's been a kind of an amazing kind of hack for me in terms of just having a community of people that I can ask advice for.
No, that's awesome. And, you know, I've been a happy customer at multiple companies, so you're doing a great job. You guys got to keep it up. We could obviously sit here all day and talk about all the additional things Sendoso does we probably didn't get to. Because at my last company, I got a great look at what you're able to do on the customer success side as well. I've always thought of it from a sales point of view. That's how I've always used it. But as, you know, something even as simple as using it as a gift box for year one renewal, you know,
totally.
Like there's another thing. Like, it's just so incredible the opportunity that Sendoso provides to kind of do what other companies won't do so you can accomplish what they can't, right?
Yeah.
Jerry Rice quote.
Yeah, exactly. The creativity that it inspires is just amazing to see. And it's just a really nice tool in your tool belt that you can go out there and engage with customers and prospects in ways that you could never do before.
Yeah, I love it. Chris, thanks for the time today. If people want to engage with you, obviously you're busy, so don't look them up on LinkedIn and send them a bunch of sales emails, right? Like let's give Chris his time. But if people are interested in connecting with you or with Sendoso, what's the best way to find you?
Yeah, if you're intrigued about Sendoso, go to sendoso.com, sendoso.com. You can email me. It's Chris, K-R-I-S, at sendoso.com. Always happy to connect with other entrepreneurs on LinkedIn too. So just look me up there. It's Chris Rudigrop. And like I mentioned, I love chatting with other entrepreneurs and founders or people that want to be a founder, you know, and a salesperson that has a good idea that wants to know a little bit more in the weeds on how I did it. So hit me up and happy to take it offline.
And another example of why, if you're a salesperson and the person you're trying to talk to has been on a podcast, go listen to the whole podcast, because you never know what kind of contact information they might drop at the end. That's like the reward, right? The reward for the people that got all the way through the podcast. And we'll make sure to put all that information on Sendosa's website, as well as a link to Chris's LinkedIn in the show notes below. If you're interested in interacting any further with Hatch Adventures, the sponsor of this episode, we will have their information in the show notes below. And you can also connect with me on LinkedIn and the Founders Formula podcast. And we will see everybody on the next one. Thank you, Chris.
See you, Chad.